Call the Committee on Rules and Legislative Administration to order. The clerk will note the roll, and a quorum is present. Senator Simpson will move the Rules Committee minutes for Wednesday, May 1st, 2008. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Carlson, why don't we take your bill up first, House File 2554.
And
Representative Carlson,
would you like me to move the bill?
That would be great.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, then I'd like to move that the bill House File 2554 be recommended to have and placed on the general register.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Welcome to your committee.
And Chairman, I'll just read a few quick comments, and there's a packet that we provided that's in everyone's folder, and in addition to that, you're receiving a letter in support of it from the League of Women Voters. But, Mr. Chairman, House File 2554 amends the Constitution to allow the legislature to call a special session, and under current law, only the governor is able to call a special session. This amendment would allow both the governor and the legislature to call a special session. First, the bill limits the number of legislative days for a special session called by the legislature to 7 days. Second, there must be a majority of members in each body in order to call a session, and that would be rather than a majority of both houses. Under this proposal, to call a special session, the legislature would need either the signatures of the majority of the members from both bodies or the agreement of the presiding officers in each body. So there'd be a two-track possibility to do that. Currently, legislatures in 33 states have this capability, including Iowa, Wisconsin, and Missouri. Part of that packet then, you would have a list of the states that are able to call a special session. In the vast majority of these states, the legislature rarely calls a special session. However, the ability of the state legislature to call a special session would provide a balance between the branches of government and reduce the gridlock that results when governing bodies do not agree. In addition, this change would allow the legislature to respond quickly to catastrophic events, and I'll use a couple of recent ones, for example, the 35W bridge collapse and the floods in southeastern Minnesota. There was ongoing confusion about whether or when the governor would call a special session to address these problems. At times such as these, any delay is costly. The state legislature was ready to act, and with this change, we could have done so. Finally, the bill allows for additional transparency and flexibility in the process. By limiting the number of legislative days to 7, it allows enough time for the public to be able to participate and the flexibility to shape legislation based on that dialogue, while at the same time ensuring these issues are resolved in a timely manner. So, kind of in summary, Mr. Chairman, it provides a balance between the branches of government, more transparency, it would eliminate gridlock, and it would allow the legislature to act promptly to disasters. It would simply provide more flexibility. And in your packet, I would just point out, in addition to the letter and support from the League of Women Voters, upon introduction were literally several editorials, and we've got a couple of them in your packet. The state's largest newspaper, the Tribune, endorsed it, but there were regional newspapers that endorsed the concept as well. And I think one of the copies that you have is from Benucci, as well as the Tribune. If you read the Tribune, one, the only negative, so to speak, in that editorial was that there was some concern about the number of legislative days, and when the bill was before the Government Office Committee, I amended it to limit it to 7 legislative days. So actually, before I had been interviewed by the writer for the Tribune, I had actually thought of putting in a limitation, and that was pointed out in the editorial. So we kind of, I just simply say we're on the same page in that regard. So, Mr. Chairman, that's it in a nutshell. It's not something in the other states that's been overused by any stretch of the imagination, but it would provide more balance between the branches.
Any discussion to the Carlson bill? President Magnus.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I noticed that you have in your bill, Representative Carlson, that a simple majority would be able to call a special session. Is that the case in the other states, or how many other states have a simple majority, or do they have a supermajority or whatever?
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Magnus, my recollection is that is fairly typical when we were looking into the issue that most states it's a simple majority, if I recall correctly.
Okay. Thank you.
Representative Simpson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Representative Carlson, your history goes back here a long, long ways. Could you tell me in the decades that you served here how many times you think that this would have been necessary for the legislature to call a special session where the governor hasn't or has?
That's no problem.
That's, pretty hard to predict. I suspect that there would have been times when the legislature would have reacted more more quickly. The time that comes to mind is the six special sessions that I was here for when Governor Twee was in office. And I don't want to be unduly critical of Governor Twee, but I was chairing a fiscal committee at the time, the Education Division of Appropriations, and we would have a special session, and the fiscal analyst would tell us, you're going to be back in a few weeks. Had the legislature had that capability without some of the prior agreements that ended up being short, if you will, of really resolving the budget problem, we probably would have resolved it differently, and in my view might have avoided the six special sessions, or at least some of them, by addressing it in a more timely manner and doing some things that virtually everybody in the legislature felt that needed to be done that ultimately were done to provide for the funding of state government at the time.
Well, Mr. Speaker, Mr. Chairman, I sometimes think that, if things aren't broken, we don't need to fix them. And I'm not really sure that the system we have is broken. So I just really question that we're going to gain anything by doing this. And I think with your history and the time that you've been here and all the different people you worked under, I just can't imagine that this is going to be beneficial to us. So that's just my thought.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Carlson, I like the idea generally. I think there should be parity in the ability to call a special session, but I'm just wondering whether you could comment on, starting on line 1.14 of the proposed constitutional amendment, could you talk about the potential concern, given your history, that you could have a situation where a majority of a House voted successfully to trigger a special session, and since this requires either the majority of the House or the presiding officer, you could have the majority of the members of one or both houses calling for a special session over the objection of the presiding officer. So, for example, last term of the legislature, when we had virtual parity in the House, 68-66, you could have the situation, let's say at that time with Speaker Swigum, just to use the real-world example, you could have 66 Democrats and a couple Republicans teaming up to request a special session, and assuming that the Senate did likewise, you might have a reluctant Speaker Swigum presiding over a session that he never wanted to have. I'm just wondering what you think about that. Obviously, it doesn't rise to the level of concern for you to take it out of the bill, but what do you think about that, given your history?
Would create an interesting scenario, but it would be a possibility. When I mentioned transparency, one of the things that sometimes happens, and if I could tell a short story, because it did also involve the Twee years, but I had a small bill in conference committee, and I was watching the news one night, and the Speaker of the House at the time, the Majority Leader of the Senate, and Governor Quay came out, and they said they'd reached the budget agreement. And I got a phone call. They were on the air, and they're off camera, and the phone rings, and it's the Speaker of the House. Glenn, is your bill still in conference committee? Yes, we have an amendment for you in the morning. And it was balancing a shortfall of about $1 billion, a number very similar to what we have. But my point is, where was the ability of the members and the public to really weigh in on that? We adopted the amendments in the morning, and that was then up on the House floor, and the agreement was no amendment. So I think the scenario that you lay out there, where members could be more involved, I think would be a plus. And I think that the leadership of a given body has a good relationship with their caucus, that that scenario probably wouldn't come about. But theoretically, I suppose you could do that in spite of the wishes of the leadership. The likelihood, I think, would be probably pretty slim.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Carlson. The way I'm reading this, it is possible for us then to have a tell me where I'm wrong here, because as I'm reading it, it seems to me it's possible for us to have a continuous session. When we get to the end of the 7 days, the two presiding officers declare another special session. We get to the end of that 7 days, the presiding officers declare another special session. It seems to me that this really sets up an endless session.
Representative Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, I think the check on that would be public opinion if that was in fact what was happening. And the other thing, I think you have to look at what happens in the other states, and that's just not a problem.
So it is possible.
Representative Carlson.
Well, it's possible, Mr. Chairman, where you might have more than one special session if the need arises. You could have a special session due to some problem in the spring, and if we're not in session, you could have another incident maybe in the fall. But I think the scenario you lay out there, where you were just basically having one session back-to-back, I think the public would weigh in, and that would be problematic. The other thing is the governor retains all of his or her powers and responsibilities, and if that kind of a scenario were developing, I suspect you'd run into difficulty getting bills signed.
That's an amendment.
No, I decided this is not a very good idea.
Okay. Representative Simpson.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just going off of what Representative Osmond just said, I think back to spending all of May, all of June, and most of July here in 2003 or 4, whatever it was, and I could see if you end up in a situation where you have the party's not willing to compromise, what Representative Osmond just stated would be exactly true. Every 7 days, you would just, the leadership would just say, we're going to go 7 more days. And if we don't get what we want in 7 days, we're going to go 7 more days. And of course, the public is going to make an outcry, but I could see this thing going on and on and on. I think it's a bad way to go.
Any further questions? Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Carlson. What about the scenario where the legislature, we came in on February 12th this year, I believe it was, what if the legislature called a special session in January and adjourned to a date certain in June? And so we would be in regular session, having to conclude in May, and then came in a special session in June. Is that a possibility?
I see where you guys come up with all of your amendments. Your brains are just churning around with these ideas. Representative Carlson.
I think these are all interesting questions that aren't really practical in the sense of I can't see them happening, but I think you're asking if you could theoretically have a special session that overlaps with a regular session.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had that in Minnesota.
Right.
Under the governor calling it special session.
Right.
The limitation here, Mr. Chairman, is the 7 legislative days, and I just underscore that we're actually in the minority of states. 33 states allow the legislature to call a special session. And when we looked at that, it is not overused in a single state. In some states, it's never been used. And in other states, it's been seldom used. But my point is that it provides more balance in the negotiations, where the legislature does have that balance and could call a special session if need be. And like I say, we've had situations historically in Minnesota where at least I think it would have been better had special sessions been called in a more timely manner than what they were. But I would suspect in the end, sitting down in those negotiations and with a given governor knowing that a special session could be called by the legislative leadership and or the members of the legislature, that the governor probably in the end ends up calling it because he understands that there is an alternative route.
That's simple.
Well, and thank you, Representative Carlson. I understand, and I know you can overlap special sessions with regular sessions, and I think it enhances the opportunity for mischief among legislators. I mean, I've been in the legislature for, 13 years, and we've had special sessions under Carlson, Ventura, Polente, and I don't ever remember being asked by constituents, you know, we need you back in session, we need you back in session. It seems to me that's kind of where some more danger occurs, potentially. And, I mean, in terms of offering an amendment and having a no-amendment deal, I don't see that situation changing, because it typically is, whether it's in the existing budget negotiations that are going on right now, every member has the ability to offer an amendment to any legislative package that comes to the House floor, whether it's a special session or whether it's a negotiated budget deal. So I don't think that's going to change, because I think you're always going to have the legislative leaders working it out with the governor, regardless of the party, asking for potentially no amendments. But I think the public is in the end going to want something that's quick, that's efficient, and gets the work done. And I think we've seen that under, regardless of who the party has been in control of the governor.
Any further discussion? Seeing none, Representative Carlson renews his motion that House File 2554 be recommended passed and sent to the General Register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Representative.
Thank you, Representative Carlson. Next up on the agenda is House File 3796 in Eakinbell. Members, I will move the House File 3796 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Representative Eakin and Hosh, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and I also have a delete all amendment that I would like to have approved, or moved if I could.
Sure. I will move H3796A2 amendment to put the bill in the order the author would like. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Eakin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, and Representative Hosh and I have been working on an issue that I think needs to be resolved. Started working on it last year. It's a conflict of interest that I believe is built within our Constitution, allowing us to set our own pay. This is a constitutional amendment that would rectify that, correct that situation, remove that conflict of interest from the Constitution, and establish an independent council that's going to be appointed by the governor and the chief justice of the Supreme Court. Each one is going to choose 8 members, and actually the governor, it's going to be 1 from each congressional district, which would be 8 members now. There is language in here that would allow for changes if there's a change in the number of congressional districts in the state of Minnesota. But at least half of those members would have to be from the party that has a majority in the Minnesota legislature. The rest of them would be coming from the party that has the second most members in the legislature. So it would be a bipartisan council that would be establishing the pay. And I think the issue is to deal with this conflict of interest, and to establish this council would, I think, go a long way to help reestablish some faith in our government and establishing some, I think, positive government reform here. And Representative Hawks, as I said, he's been working with me on this as well. And so I appreciate him being here, and if he would like to make any comments.
Representative Hawks.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Eakin. Representative Eakin gave a good overview of what we're proposing here today. I think a lot of us, when we go back to our districts, we have heard, you know, how can you set your own pay? That's just not fair. I don't get to set my own pay in my own job. I also think
you know, with politics getting in the way of things, that there's oftentimes inconsistencies between the House and Senate when it comes to certain levels of compensation. To remove the politics and to try to bring some more faith into the process of prescribing legislative pay and compensation, I think moving to a citizens panel is the best way to do that. This has to be done, of course, by a constitutional amendment, because it's already prescribed in the Constitution that the legislature has to set their pay at this point. Hopefully this will bring more consistency in the process. I know that my constituents strongly support this proposal. I actually did a legislative survey in my district that was mailed out to 10,000 people. Over 800 people responded, and 94.7% said they would support this. And I didn't do a leading question. I did it exactly of how the wording was proposed in this legislation. So I think this is something that's important for us to pursue, and would be, appreciate the discussion and eventually your support on this bill.
Okay, questions? Representative Mahoney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm working on the amendment on page 1, line 15, where it starts, however, if Minnesota has more than 8 congressional districts. I'm kind of confused there, because we could easily go down as well as go up, and I'm just wondering how the author of the bill would feel if we deleted that and on line 1.16 congressional districts, and then capitalize the half or more. Just leave it like that, because I think you might.
Representative Egan. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Mahoney. Yes, we could do that, or if Minnesota has more or less than 8 congressional districts, half or more of the members, let's be pointed from the political party, has the most members. Would that...
I'm fine with that, I think. Well, actually, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I think you don't know what 100 years from now what we might have in congressional districts. I would suggest that... I'll let the other author talk to somebody who knows more about the Constitution than I do.
I'll let them confer for a moment while they're conferring. Representative Blomberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I had actually identified the same issue, and I was suggesting that rather than having, that I think we have an issue on two lines. On line 1.11, where it says 4 members, I think we should put half the members, and at the end of that line where it has 4, it would have half the members again. And then in 1.15, we could consider saying, however, if Minnesota has an odd number of congressional districts, and that way it would deal with the issue of whether we have an even or an odd number, but not have to deal with the up or down.
Okay.
Representative Beacon.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Loeffler and Mahoney, I was just getting some advice from Mr. Shepard here, and he was thinking that, that there's going to be some problems with the suggested changes as well, and that maybe this is something we should work on in the interim before it goes to Ways and Means Committee and try to work things out with staff as well, so that we get the language correct, especially when we're dealing with constitutional amendments. We want to make sure we get the language correct. So instead of doing it on the fly, we could just work on it in the interim. I think we certainly see the problems here and the need to put in some language to correct that.
I believe the intent of the members is pretty clear for you guys to work on as you go forward.
Okay.
Mr. Osmond.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I just, on your, where you, line 1.6, it's talking about salary and per diem payments. I don't know if you've, considered the pension also, or there's just not, we're not going that direction, or why just the two?
Representative Egan.
Mr. Chair and Representative Osment, and no, we haven't really been considering reimbursements and pensions that. I guess the most controversial issue that we've been dealing with has been the salary and the per diem, and that's the reason we chose to focus on that issue and leave the reimbursements and the other issues, pension issue, to the legislature itself.
Thanks, Ms. Chair, and that, if there's anything I can do to assist in this, I'm leaving the legislature, but I think one of the biggest problems I see in our future is that we are not providing adequate compensation to keep young families represented in the legislature, and blue-collar non-public employees are just struggling to try and stay in the legislature once they get here. So I think we really need to be doing something in this area positively.
Mr. Chair, again, this is obviously this amendment doesn't say anything about what pay should be. It just establishes who should set it, and that is the issue here. Who should be setting the pay, and again, we believe it's a conflict of interest for us to be setting our own pay.
Semplowski.
Mr. Chair, I just have a question, maybe a couple of them. I'm looking at the Carlson bill, which is a constitutional amendment. That was referred to government operations. Now I'm looking at the Hosh bill, which is a constitutional amendment, and that went directly to rules. I'm wondering why one goes to GovOps and one goes to rules. Can you tell me why one would and not the other?
Representative Pawlowski, that is a decision made in the Speaker's office, and I did not consult or have not consulted on why that was the case.
So, Mr. Chair, this is an arbitrary decision then, and as I'm looking at the rules, I don't see in the Carlson bill the creation of a council. I do see the creation of a rather significant council in the other bill that will establish legislative pay, which would be a very high priority issue. And I note that I've already taken a look at 4.15, where a constitutional amendment must go to rules eventually. But I'm just wondering how many more constitutional amendments I could expect going to GovOps and how many I could expect diverted here. We have one-tenth of the bills introduced in government operations right now, and I'm trying to figure out inconsistencies, and consistency I know is the hobgoblin of small minds, but apparently maybe it's the topic that diverts it from one to the other. Would that be a possibility, Mr. Chair?
Representative Pawlowski, I am not in the mind of the Speaker and how those decisions are made to refer bills. That would be best asked of their office. Perhaps they also looked at Rule 4.13 as well in making those decisions.
Mr. Chair, I did.
Representative Pawlowski.
I have one other observation. A similar bill was introduced last year. It was put on the agenda at our last committee hearing. It was removed at the request of the author of the bill. So it's interesting, too, that that constitutional amendment went to GovOps. We had it on the agenda, it was pulled, and this one did not. I find it disconcerting.
That's him, Junkie.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. a couple questions that maybe would have been answered if they had gone to GovOps. But on the line 1.9, 1.10, etc. I read it: 8 non-judges appointed by the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, 1 member, and 1 member from each congressional district appointed by the governor. Why wouldn't we make the 8 non-judges from each congressional district too?
That's a beacon.
To get balance across the state. Otherwise, you could have 8 people, the way I read this, appointed from one city in the state.
That's a beacon.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Junkie, huh? Yeah, I would be open to that. I think that would be a change that I'd be willing to incorporate.
So that's one of those.
That's him, Junkie.
As you're working on language, you might want to look at.
Sure.
That's him, Junkie.
The other, I just want to get what your, on tape, what your read of, what is per diem when you look at line 1.6, and then you go down to the bottom, 1.20 and 1.21, other items of compensation shall be determined as provided by law. I assume law or rule, which we do here, is set the house rules or other compensation. In some states, you know, the federal per diem rate, I don't even know what it is now, 150, 160, 180, it keeps going up. But that also is interpreted by many to mean that that's also your housing and other things. And some states will give you the federal per diem rate and say, now you take that as a rural member and you pay your housing out of it or you pay other expenses out of it. North Dakota is one that has an extremely high per diem rate, but they're expected to probably pay more out of that. Where we're opposite, we kind of give a daily expense that's non-itemized. But then we, in addition, give housing and other things to rural members. So what's your read? I guess I want on the record what's your read of is that the per diem they will be setting versus these other items of compensation.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hockey, envision this being the same as far as other reimbursements, housing and travel. they would not be included in the per diem. That's a concern that I certainly have as a rural member as well. I think most rural members do have concerns that we want to make sure that members are reimbursed for the expenses they incur as a result of doing the job here.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Junkie, I concur with Representative Eakin that per diem would include how we currently define per diem in our rule, and that the other compensation, lodging, mileage, and also including pension and health care benefits would be prescribed by law. And we want to solely focus on the per diem rate and the salary that legislators receive.
And
Mr. Chair, just to finish up, I do support this bill. I think it'll be broadly supported in the fall. I mean, again, the cynical public believes that we just have carte blanche to raise our salary and per diem and other things. Our county commissioners, I mean, we get lumped in with them. We get lumped in with Congress. And I agree with Representative Osmond, and I'm sure that Representative Tickleston, were she here, would say the same thing, that at some point we have to take care of members here, or we really will get a non-diverse membership in this body, and it's moving that way now. To recruit someone to come down here for 6 months of the year with the salary and other things we have is getting very, very difficult. And unless you're a retired member it's really difficult to leave family and work and come down here. So I do support this. I do think it'll be broadly accepted. And I was here for the last salary that we I voted for in 1997, along with maybe half a dozen people in this room, that last increase, and it's been since then that we voted for a salary increase that then didn't take effect until 1999. And so I think this is a much better way. It really opens it up to the public, with this council having input to it, and again, really being fair. We've attempted this in the past with pay compensation councils. They've given us the recommendation, but because politics rules the day and we represent people that are cynical, we come down here cynical too, and we never then pass forward what's even been recommended to us by a group like this. So I like putting this in the Constitution. I agree, Representative Hosh. I think folks around the state will vote for this in large numbers just to take that decision away from us.
That's it, Bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A lot of the questions have been answered. I had a question about 2.33 and a couple of lines thereafter. It says, the salary recommendations for judges and constitutional officers take effect if an appropriation of money. Did I read that right? That part has nothing to do with the legislators?
That's the Beacon.
The legislators are stricken.
Chair and Representative Dale, that is correct.
Okay. And the other thing I wanted to comment. Thank you, Mr. Chair. The other thing I wanted to comment is on the lines of Representative Osmond. Not everyone in the legislature is blessed to be able to hold a job outside of the legislature for a variety of different reasons. Although this is the citizens' legislature, and the retirement that we have, I don't know that much about it, but I know that when I get my statement in the mail, that it looks like after 6 years of service, I might be able to buy a tank of gasoline with my retirement. Now, let me tell you, members, at my former job, I put in my deferred compensation account $1,000 every 2 weeks in my deferred comp account at my former job. That would mean that it would be somewhere in 6 years around $72,000 plus the growth rate. That probably would be around $125,000 to $150,000 in a retirement account. The point I'm making is I chose that job, but to look at people out that aren't as financially blessed or capable as some of us, it almost makes it impossible for a person to raise a family and to have any expectation that they can retire and at least afford a tank of gas, let alone food or propane or things like that. And I just think that it is very, however we get there, we need to really take a strong look at this. And I know there's differences about per diem and things of that nature, but we really need to embrace people, to keep people in the legislature that are people, and that they're not wealthy, you know, that they can afford. I mean, frankly, I don't know that many people that can really afford to be in the legislature in my district. So that's my feeling about this. And I when I ran my company, I tried to be compassionate about that idea. That when I used to complain about the minimum wage, I'd look at their W-2 and then I'd ask myself, could I do it on what I pay them? So I paid them more. And I gave them benefits so that it made it so their life was easier. And I just think that that's what we have to do here as well. So that's my little speech about this subject.
And Mr. Chair, if I could. And I just wanted to mention again that so we don't lose sight of what the focus of this bill is, because it doesn't say anything about what pay should be. Pay could go down as a result of this compensation council. We don't know. The focus of this bill is just simply to remove a conflict of interest. We should not be setting our pay, and to set up an independent bipartisan commission that will do it, I think is the fairest way to remove that conflict of interest.
Representative Loeffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and to the authors. I do think it will start a healthy dialogue about expectations of legislative service and full-time, part-time, all kinds of interesting discussions. As we're looking at wordsmithing this, I think in the actual constitutional amendment language, you should think about putting in a provision that the members appointed have to be non-legislators, since that's the promise we're making in the ballot question, and just to have that kind of parallel. But my main question was on the second part of the bill, which deals with the Citizen Compensation Council to determine the salaries of constitutional officers, justices of the Supreme Court, judges of the Court of Appeals and District Court, and the heads of state and metropolitan agencies. And I'm wondering about your rationale in taking legislators off of this and putting it entirely under the jurisdiction, as I read it, of appointees of the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, who is, as I understand it, a governor appointee. So you'd have a governor's appointee kind of deciding exclusively on state agency heads, on Supreme Court justice salaries. If we're really talking about avoiding, you know, conflicts of interest, it seems like for these other officers, we actually should keep the legislators on so that, once again, it's that you're avoiding self-serving people appointing, you know, deciding the salaries for themselves or others. And so I thought the original balance, now that we're taking legislators out of this group, was actually a better balance, particularly when you consider, you know, who the appointing authority is.
Representative Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Loeffler, because the Chief Justice is the governor's appointee doesn't mean that it's always going to line up with the current governor in office. And I think we need to remember that. Right now, we are just focusing on the legislative pay, and that's why we have to remove the legislators from the Compensation Council as it currently is. We still prescribe the executive and the judicial salaries as we currently do at this point. We're just removing, if this constitutional amendment were to pass, we just have to remove legislators from that process, because it would be done in a different way.
Representative Loeffler.
Mr. Chair, actually I was suggesting that we have two councils, one that's setting up the legislators' pay and one that would include a broader group that would establish the pay scales for these other groups that are itemized. And I don't think having two different groups, both of which honor the spirit of your bill, which is to avoid that perception, the public perception of perhaps insider influence, I think would actually better honor the sort of spirit that you're putting together. So I was actually envisioning two, addressing both groups.
Mr. Chair, and
Representative
Loeffler, I, you know, certainly am open to those ideas, and I know we've been talking, Representative Hosh and I have also been talking about, you know, the possibilities of having an independent council also dealing with the pay for judges and executive officers. And that's right now, though, all we're looking at focusing on is just the legislative pay. This is the one area where there is clearly a conflict of interest. We don't see that in the setting of pay and compensation for the other branches. It's in the legislature that we see that conflict of interest, and that's why we focus on that in that point only.
This is Simon.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I
And it sounds like there's going to be further wordsmithing later on, and I don't know when that will be, but I just want to make sure on line 1.20, other items of compensation for legislators shall be determined as provided by law. I like the fact that we're making reference to as provided by law, but what do you mean exactly by the other items of compensation? Is this what Representative Osment was talking about, like pension considerations and other things, or is there, I just want to make sure, since we're putting this in the Constitution, that we're clear.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, yes, we are talking about pensions and also housing, lodging, and travel. That also is included in other items of compensation. Health care as well.
Representative Simon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Eakin and Hodge, I think my other suggestion would be to this idea of on lines 1.9 through about 1.11, I know it's been taken up elsewhere, but this idea that as designed in the year 2008, it looks like 16 members, but we don't know how many congressional districts we're going to have in the future, and I just think that's something that we really need to work on here. Could go down, could go up in 100 years, it's tough to know, but I think that's something that we have to change. And I understand the idea of taking it to congressional district as we do with other things, the Court of Appeals, as we do with the Regents and others, but that it's a way, a proxy for geographic diversity. But I don't know if over time this kind of language will do the trick. I think that's something for you to consider.
Okay. Is that a comment more?
It's a comment. I know how much Chair Pelosi likes suggestions in lieu of amendments. It's one of his cardinal rules, and I violated it.
That's okay. Any comment back from those comments? If not, we can... Okay, that's Sam Winkler.
Mr. Chair, we've had some discussion today about challenges of people with, I think Representative Osment mentioned, young families and trying to recruit people to work here who are not retired or public employees. And as someone who has young children who is not retired and is not a public employee and has other career opportunities outside of the Capitol, I have to say that it's not the compensation that's the number one challenge to being here. It is the way that this place is run, the rules and the time commitment and the kind of black hole of the into which we disappear when we come over here, and inability to make plans for careers that we have to maintain at the same time. And this is true, I think, maybe more for metro area folks who are trying to balance some of those things. But I think that while salary is important, for me, it's far more important the time that it is, the way that time is used at the Capitol. And I certainly think that reconsidering the way that the rules are written would be far more helpful for a lot of members than the compensation. Which is, yes, a comment and not a suggestion.
Any further questions or discussion? Members, I want to do the work of picking up this language in this committee and not send it to Ways and Means, because Ways and Means responsibility to constitutional amendments deals with costs and the finances of it. So in order of making it timely and maybe either apropos or ironic of Representative Winkler's comments, I've talked to both the authors and our staff here, and they think they can work out some language here in the next hour and see if that's amenable to the members here. And so it is 12:20 right now, and if we come back in 1 hour at 1:20, hopefully we'd be able to see that language, vote upon it, and get this to the next committee. Is that good with you, Representative Eakin?
It would be good with me, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any questions, members? If not, we're in recess for 1 hour. Thank you.
Call the committee back to order. I want to thank staff and members who worked diligently here in the last hour and I think came up with some language. So I'm going to move the A4 amendment, which is a delete everything, our second delete everything in a row, so members can get rid of A2, which is good, but A4 is better, I believe. So before us is the A4 amendment. Representative Eakin, if you want to explain the amendment.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. And I do have an oral amendment also to the delete all amendment, if I could move that.
Sure, if you want to
have that moved and
state that.
Sure, and it's on the ballot question itself to on lines 2.1 to 2.3, and actually the change is on 2.2. instead of
2.4, you're on the wrong amount.
Sorry.
Mr. Chair.
2.4. And the question would be changed so that you would remove compensation and insert citizens.
On line 2.4, delete compensation and replace with citizens. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Do you have the amendment? Yes. Staff has the amendment? Okay. And I will incorporate that into my delete all motion.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair and members, the delete all amendment, basically the same as the original in its intent to, again, establish an independent council to set pay and per diem for legislators, to remove the conflict of interest, which is currently built into the Constitution, which allows legislators to set their own pay. We, Representative Hosh and I, felt that this was a conflict of interest that needed to be removed, and so that's what this bill does. We did change some things to address concerns that certain members of the committee had. Representative Junkie did have concerns about Supreme Court Chief Justice appointing members from congressional districts. He would prefer that. That was incorporated in this delete all amendment. Representative Loeffler also expressed concerns about the composition of the Compensation Council. Making sure that at least half of them would be from the party that has the majority of members in the legislature, the other half coming from the party with the second most, and of course there's a problem if there's an odd number, and we address that as well by stating that that the party with the most members in the legislature should have the least or the smallest possible majority on the council, and then the rest coming from the party with the second most members. So that was also addressed. Also, the change in the language of the ballot question itself, we did make a change in that also to emphasize the fact that there would be no legislators on this compensation council. And I think that that's important to emphasize. There are no legislators involved in choosing members of this compensation council, and there will be no members of the legislature serving on this compensation council. So it would be a complete removal of the conflict of interest. And with that, I'll stand for any questions.
Okay, Representative Bill.
Well, Mr. Chairman, that was really the question itself. It says the Constitution shall be amended to remove legislators' ability to set their own salaries, and instead establish a, as amended, citizens' council with no legislators. It just seems like when I read that, it's so cumbersome, with no legislators to prescribe salaries for legislators. I mean, I don't know, almost everything that we have, citizens' councils, if they include legislators, it will say legislators and citizens in almost everything we do around here. And I just think that's cumbersome to put that in there. I understand what your intent is. It just reads in a cumbersome way. With no legislators to prescribe salaries for legislators. And I know what you're doing, but I think when you say citizens' council, it gets us there, particularly when in the first part of the sentence it says, remove legislators' ability to set. I'm just trying to think how when people read that, is it cumbersome to them to think that through. And that's just my only comment. Otherwise,
Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Dill, I think you bring up some legitimate concerns. We certainly want the language to be as clear as possible, and we thought maybe we'd be clarifying, but maybe it's something we have to look at further. I think citizens, we did feel that maybe it wasn't clear enough because legislators are citizens as well. But we certainly don't want it to be cumbersome. Maybe even removing citizens might make it a little less cumbersome. It probably makes the point clear enough to say that no legislators. But that's something that we can certainly consider for amendments.
And that might be another way to get there. And if it read, and instead establish a council with no legislators. It just seems cumbersome to me, and I mean maybe it doesn't mean anything, but it just didn't feel when I read it. You know, there should be a kind of a flow to this thing, so that when a person reads it, because I know when I do those constitutional amendments, I read them pretty quick and try and get the essence of what it is and vote. And I don't want to make it so that somebody's sitting there thinking, now, you know, what are they really trying to accomplish here? I want them to think that, but I don't want them to be confused in how they think it. So that's my.
Mr. Chair and Representative Bill, so you would be suggesting maybe just dropping citizens to make it a little less cumbersome? Is that what you're thinking of doing? Or,
well, I think it's, Mr. Chair.
Representative Bill.
I just think it's a point of that we should debate.
To that point, Mr. Chair?
If I got two to that point, I believe Representative Osment, were you to that point?
To that point.
Osment and then Mahoney. Representative Osment.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Suggest that maybe on line 2.4 you drop the words with no legislators.
Yep.
And then if you'd add before citizens the word non-legislative, so it'd read instead establish a non-legislative citizen council to prescribe salary for legislators.
Okay. And Mr. Chair and Representative Osment, I think that might improve it. I believe that maybe we could even. I'm wondering if even citizen is necessary if we're saying non-legislative.
Non-legislative council.
Non-legislative council. It's fewer words and maybe a little clearer and easier to understand. So I would leave it up to the body if the members if.
Do you want to make that oral amendment, please?
I would like to check with Mr. Shepard to see if that is accomplishing what I'm.
Yeah. Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, I think that what Representative Osment stated works fine, and that's what the committee decided.
Mr. Shepard, could you state the language then that Representative Osment is making in his motion, please?
If I could.
Or Representative Osment could.
If I could just speak to that.
Oh, Representative Eakin.
Before moving on, just thinking about it a little more, I'm just thinking as far as being easier to understand if with no legislators is easier than non-legislative as far as understanding the meaning of that. So I guess I would prefer maybe to keep with no legislators in there, but maybe we could drop citizens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would probably make it clear.
Okay, well, let's continue to have some discussion before we change anything. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I've got two places. I've got a comment on this piece here and then a question. But would it make more sense, members, that it read, and I'll start on 2.4 after the first comma, and instead establish a citizen-only council to prescribe salaries for legislators. So you would insert only the word only after citizens and strike with no legislators. And then I'm just wondering, and I guess I can come back to it a little later down at 2.15, but to that first point, maybe there's more conversation.
Yep. Representative Simon and then Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a related point here, but one that I think we need to get to before we get to what we're doing now, and that is, I know that there's a Supreme Court case out there that says that the ballot language, that really scrutinizes the ballot language to make sure that it accurately reflects what the constitutional amendment would be. And in fact, I think the case says the whole thing could be invalidated if the question is an accurate reflection. And my worry is, and maybe I'm just not seeing it, does the actual text of the constitutional amendment itself say that there's going to be no legislators? I'm not seeing it on here. Maybe I just overlooked it. Because if it doesn't, we may think that's what we mean, but the text of what's going to be in the Constitution doesn't say anything about prohibiting legislators. And if we're going to put it in the question, we have to put it in the constitutional amendment, or we could invalidate the whole thing. What goes to the public in the voting booth has to, as accurately as possible, reflect what we're actually trying to do.
Representative Eakin.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, I think you're correct on that. And Representative Loeffler did actually bring this up as well, that there should be language in here, in this, the actual language of the constitutional amendment, stating non-legislators. And that is something that we'll have to, maybe we can work on just getting, we can get that done now through oral amendment.
Okay, why don't we deal with that issue first, Representative Simon, and then come back to the ballot question. Mr. Shepard, do you have some suggested language for us?
Mr. Chair and members, I would suggest on page 1, line 20, after the period, to insert the sentence, none of the members of the council may be legislators.
Representative Simon, would you like to move that oral?
I'll move that language.
Okay.
Chair.
Representative Simon moved the oral language. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Okay, back to the issue of the ballot language. Representative Eakin.
And thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Hosh and I are in agreement that Representative Mahoney's language would probably be the best here in clarifying it. And so we can maybe move that amendment.
Move that amendment.
Okay, would you please restate your amendment, Representative Mahoney?
The first oral amendment, we had changed compensation to citizen. So after citizen, insert only.
Where are you at?
Page 2, line 4. And I'm going to let the grammar be corrected as needed, you know, because I'm not perfect at that. For members who just came in just recently, we have an oral amendment on page 2, line 4, compensation had been changed to the word citizen, so I think it would have to be citizen in my amendment. So it would read, after the first comma, I will start, and instead establish a citizens-only council, striking the words with no legislators, and to continue to prescribe salaries for legislators. Staff, is that... I can repeat it if needed. Need be.
Yeah.
Okay. And I make that motion.
Okay.
No. Pardon?
Representative Mahoney makes the oral amendment. Mr. Shepard, does that... You got any advice for us on that?
Mr. Chair, members, yes, I think that sounds fine. I think we were discussing that there would probably be a hyphen between citizens and only.
Okay.
Citizen hyphen only.
Okay. We got that. Let's go.
I just was going to take another tack at it.
Well, we have...
But we have a motion.
We have a motion for this before us. You can certainly discuss hypothetically what you would look at right now as some language.
I'll just give it and then you can do with it as you may.
Let's go. Go ahead.
It would read on line 2.4, and instead establish a council, a council comprised of citizens to prescribe salaries for legislators.
Okay.
A council comprised of citizens, or comprised, or there was an appropriate word in there,
constituted.
Okay.
But comprised of citizens. Just another idea. A council comprised of citizens.
Mr. Chair,
I don't know if it does the same thing, if it's wordier, better, not better.
Okay. Representative Dill, I thank you for the suggestion. I think that it makes it, it is wordier and makes it even a little more cumbersome. And matter of fact, looking at it, I think citizens is probably sufficient, looking at it, even not having to say citizens only necessarily, just a citizens council. That would probably be less wordy, and this is an important issue because this is a ballot question,
right.
So we want to make sure we get it right and that it's clear and easy. It flows well, as Representative Dill said. I would probably suggest just putting in citizens and leaving it at that.
And the other point of this is this bill, if passed off the floor, will go to the Senate and conferred, and we'll have to match up the language with them. So there's some opportunity to refine this language between now and if it would eventually make it to the ballot. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I would prefer not to change my oral amendment because I think it would be clearer to the voting populace. And I have great trust in the judges that if we write it, they will change it. I mean, they will interpret it in a way that I'm not happy with. So I'll leave it the way I've worded it.
Any other discussion to the Mahoney oral amendment? Hearing none, All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Mr. Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and members, I've spoken earlier to page 2, line 15, where it says membership. We have the word, the title, the Compensation Council consisting of six. Do we have to change that at all because of this?
Mr. Mahoney, I believe that that is an existing council that we would not be changing.
Yeah. That's fine.
Okay. Mr. Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I have two questions. The first is on line 1.9. We have at the end of the line, it says one non-judge. I'm not sure if the term non-judge is a term of art in the law or constitution, or if we have to spell out a little bit more what that means.
Mr. Shepard.
Could that be, for example, a potted plant, which is a non-judge?
Mr. Chair, members, it's not a term of art. The term is not defined in the Constitution, so if the committee felt it would be more preferable, the term one person who is not a judge.
Mr. Chair, I would move on line 1.9 that instead of the word non-judge, we would insert the language after one person who is not a judge.
Do we have the amendment too?
Yep.
All right. Discussion. Representative Eakin.
Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, I'm fine with that amendment, so I would encourage people to support it.
Okay. All those in favor of the Winkler oral amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, on lines 1.13 and other places, if I see the phrase belong to the political party. And I'm not aware of how, I don't know if this is defined in law in other places, but how we determine whether an individual belongs to a political party or not, other than well-known affiliation.
President Beacon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Winkler, my interpretation of that was that it would be people who go to precinct caucuses, and they would be obviously registered at the precinct caucus with one party or the other. So it would be somebody who is politically active, obviously. And that would be the only way I could determine whether, I could see in determining whether a person belongs to one party or the other.
Representative Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'm just a little bit, it seems like it's sort of certainly a gray area that could be open a big possibility for litigation, potentially, because if these seats become important, then who's appointing them?
Okay.
If a governor wanted to, he could appoint anybody and all they'd, you know, their qualification could consist of going to a precinct caucus, I suppose, or something else, or you may have somebody who's well-known but didn't happen to go to the last precinct caucus and is, you know, a former governor or something who suddenly is no longer qualified. So I don't know how to fix that, but I think defining that is challenging in the Constitution.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Winkler, we have discussed that as well, and maybe clarifying language would be justified here and good. I would agree that maybe we could put something in to the effect that they would have had to have been in attendance at the precinct caucus, the last precinct caucus of that particular party.
Okay. That sounds fine.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hadn't planned to speak on this particular point, but my only worry about the precinct caucus is we may not know what such a thing is in 100 years.
No.
And the only other thing, too, and this is opening up a whole new category of debate, I suppose, is, you know, what if we want people on there who are not affiliated with a political party? And I don't know who just are common everyday citizens who vote for the person, not the party, that kind of thing. But that's not originally what I was going to speak to. I wanted to speak again to the question, the ballot question on page 2. And just so we're being precise, because I wish I had the case in front of me that I referenced earlier that says that, you know, it's been litigated before, apparently, the accuracy of the question. Since on line 2.4 it refers to, well, 2.3 and 2.4, it refers to removing legislators' ability to set their own salaries. I'm pretty sure in the Constitution now it says that what we technically do is we technically don't currently set our own salaries. We set a salary for the next legislature. And so it's implying that we're removing a power that we don't really have right now. It's making it sound a little bit better than maybe it is to that citizen saying, yeah, damn right, they shouldn't be able to set their own salaries, since
we really don't have explicitly have that right now to literally set our own salaries. I'm wondering whether we could amend it and wonder what staff might think of removing on line 2.4, removing the word their own and replacing it with the word legislative salaries, not implying a place in time. So removing legislators' ability to set legislative salaries. I know that's maybe a little nuanced there, but technically right now I don't think we do have the ability. If we were to raise our own pay right now, it wouldn't go into effect until the next legislature.
I can't.
Which, yeah, I can't. So that's, I just want to try that language out for size just so we're being accurate.
Okay, Representative Fineman offers the oral amendment. Do you have the amendment? Can you repeat the amendment, please, Representative Fineman?
Sure. The amendment, at least as I thought of it, was on lines 2.4 to strike the words their own and insert in its place the word legislative.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Loeffler.
To that point, I would suggest legislator, since we do set the salaries of legislative staff. It just might be clearer to have legislator salaries.
Legislator. Okay.
Representative Fineman amends his oral amendment. Any further discussion? Representative Deacon.
Mr. Chair and Representative Simon, and I understand what you're saying, although it's still, to me, I think, technically correct as is, because there are members, obviously, who will be here that are going to be receiving that pay increase, and the senators, do they have to go through an actual election before that would take place? They wouldn't, and they would be voting directly on it. So that would be a direct pay increase for themselves, raising their own salary, and I think that I want to make that point clear that that does happen now and that we're trying to remove that conflict of interest. So for that reason, I would not be supporting the amendment, but I appreciate your input.
The question, if anyone knows, is that true about the Senate?
Mr. Shepard.
Okay.
Yeah. Mr. Shepard is shaking his head yes, which works for me.
If that's the case, then it works for me too. A head shake goes a long way, Mr. Shepard. especially from you. But I think that satisfies me. I just want to make sure we were phrasing it accurately. I withdraw the amendment.
Okay, Representative Simon withdraws his amendment. And still has his hand up, so Representative Simon.
If I may.
Yes, no problem.
It's in the same kind of family of issues here. Again, on the accuracy of the ballot question, since we're talking about salaries and per diem, I want to make sure we don't get into any trouble by omitting something. So I wonder what committee members think about on line 2.5, maybe after the word salaries, saying and per diem. Or and 2.4 as well. I know this is getting clunky, but it is more accurate. It isn't just salaries.
Okay. Representative Deacon.
Mr. Chair, Representative Simon, and I understand that is not included in salaries, but again, adding more words, I would prefer maybe one word that could include both of those. Maybe compensation would be the word that we could use. Per diem, I know in my area of the state, a lot of people don't know what per diem is. And you put that in, it just makes it more confusing to people. And so I'm looking for, I guess, fewer words and words, again, that could include both of those.
That's him, Junkie.
I was just going to say the same thing. We don't know what per diem, heck, we don't know what it is year to year here, either amount or what it's supposed to include, and the debate is out there, and we talked about it in the first stage, too. I would leave per diem off that.
That's him, Winkler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think, though, that Representative Simon raises an important point, which is that I don't know how we're defining our terms. I don't know what is salary, just simply straight salary, are we talking? And if so, then if we're including per diem as a separate standalone category under the constitutional amendment, but we're not including it in the ballot question, I don't see how we can. I think that clearly is inconsistent. If we change the word to compensation, I don't know if there's a standard definition of compensation, whether that includes salaries and benefits or not.
Representative Deacon.
I mean, benefits.
Mr. Chair, and Representative Winkler, and I was wondering about the word, and I know this is a rather general term, but pay, because we do make reference in here to per diem pay. And pay could include then per diem as well. And actually, it's a simpler word even than salary. So if pay would work, I would be open to that.
That's in part a question to staff as well, because I don't know if pay, as you, my employment law memory isn't jogged, and whether pay is a term of art that would imply more than just whether that would necessarily imply benefits or expenses.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair and members, my sense is, first of all, salary is at least commonly understood in Minnesota statutes and I think elsewhere to be a narrower term than compensation, so that salaries would typically include a dollar wage, whereas compensation is, I think, typically understood to include benefits and things that aren't necessarily covered by the authority of this group. I don't, in at least in Minnesota statutes, as the term is used, I don't think the term pay is used in a technical sense that I'm aware of. That usually there's a phrase wages or salary, but I'm not certain how pay would be interpreted in this context.
Mr. Chair, I mean, I just don't see, for the sake of consistency, how we can avoid including the phrase per diem in the ballot question, since we are explicitly differentiating those in the amendment, unless there's another term that could be used that would encompass both.
Well, there is another way to rectify it, and that's take out per diem on page one, which is what I suspect will be there at the end of the day anyway, even though Representative Hosh, I know you have a strong feeling that way. I will bet you a dime and a smile right now that the Senate will not go along with that. So if you want it there for negotiations, that's fine, but I suggest that that's a negotiation then that takes place with wording in conference committee, because I'm going to guess that this won't ever make it to the final day unless you take per diem out. I'm just guessing what my senator friends will be doing.
Yep.
Representative Bill.
Oh, I just want to, when I heard the discussion over from the two representative attorneys here, that a per diem is a reimbursement, not pay, not salary. It's covered under federal law for non-Metro members as a non-taxable reimbursement, and it's well defined and covered by federal law and established a cap, and it has nothing to do with how much we pay. If we follow down that line that some people are discussing, then we fall right into Representative Biskin's argument that we raise per diem because we don't get pay increases. And that's not what we've ever done here. We've raised per diem because things cost more that we need to be reimbursed about. And so I think that if we are going to go down the road of putting something new in the language of the question, then we should put per diem in there if that's the will of the body. Say per diem. That seems to be the hot button. Frankly, I don't think it's the hot button that everyone thinks it is. And I agree with Representative Junkie. At the end of the day, that won't be in there if this is to move forward. But I don't want to get that confused and somehow someone interpret that a per diem is part of our salary package here at the legislature.
That's Simon.
I was just going to say, I think we need to stay away, if we decide to combine later on down the process, it sounds, I think we should stay away from the word compensation because there's a lawsuit out there alleging just that. That per diem is a factor of compensation. We don't want to provide fodder for those wanting to blow up the per diem system. So I would suggest that we stay away from that word. Repeat that for the record, just so the tape picks that up very clearly. Per diem is not compensation.
Sam Winkler.
Mr. Chair, I will move that on line 2.4 after the word salaries, we insert the words and per diem, and on line 2.5 that we strike the word, or that we don't, that after the word salary, we add the words and per diem. Subject to Mr. Shepard's approval.
That's Tim Hosh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Even though this does add more words to the language of the question, I do believe it is necessary to include in the question, and would hope that the committee supports this amendment.
Representative Louie.
Mr. Chair, and I was going to argue for a compensation. It's a little hard following my attorney friends, but to me, a compensation package or something just really seems to, just in simple language, makes the most sense, and makes the most sense going on the ballot. But, I'm not an attorney, but thank you.
Okay. Any discussion to the Winkler oral amendment? Representative Mahoney.
Members, I'm going to echo my colleague, my rural friends. I think that adding the word per diem any place in this bill is the wrong way to go. I will be voting against the Winkler Amendment, and then I will be bringing forth an amendment to strike on the front page the words per diem.
Any further discussion for the Winkler Amendment? Representative Hosher, here from you, Representative Eakin. Any advice?
I'm okay with the Winkler Amendment. So if members want to support that, that would be fine with me.
Okay. Hearing no further discussion, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The chair's in doubt. All those in favor, please raise your hand. All those opposed? Okay. 4-6, the motion does not prevail. Representative Loffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a different issue for us to address at this point, and that is on...
Well, let's take a break.
We can take a break and bring it back to per diem. I'll be glad to enter that discussion. But because we're creating this new Citizens Council to deal with the legislators' pay, I think we need to change the name of the existing Compensation Council to its more narrow focus now, and so I would suggest that on line 2.15 and 2.29 that we refer to it as the Executive and Judicial Compensation Council, so that they will no longer have legislative authority, and then when we have these two councils, we'll know which one we're referring to.
Question to Mr. Shepard. Would this be the only area in statute where the Compensation Council is referenced, and could this get a little more difficult than we could imagine?
Mr. Chair, members, I think that this would work.
Okay.
I think there would be three places in this bill on 2.9, 2.15, and 2.29 in which if those changes were made, it would clean up this bill. There may be some other places in statutes that refer to a compensation council, but it probably refers to it under this section, and I think it would work.
Okay. Representative Loffler offers her oral amendment. Can you have the lines once again, Mr.
Sure.
Shepard, on or Representative Loffler, can you give us the lines on where that's at?
I would move that on lines 2.9, 2.15, and 2.29, before the words Compensation Council, we insert Executive and Judicial. Mr. Shepard has a comment.
Mr. Shepard.
Mr. Chair, members, just a grammatical change. On 2.9, you'd have to strike the word A and insert AN. I think so. We could, as long as that's understood, mm-hmm. We'll make that work.
Sure. All right. So everybody understand the oral amendment. Any discussion on the oral amendment? Hearing none. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion prevails. Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair, I'd like to make the amend this bill on page 1, line 6. I'd like to strike the words "and any per diem payment."
Yes.
Representative Mahoney moves his oral amendment. Do you have the amendment? All right. Representative Eakin.
And Mr. Chair, Representative Mahoney, I would oppose the amendment. I do feel that per diem is also an issue that should be addressed in this amendment, so with that, I would encourage people to vote no.
Okay, Representative Hosh.
I'll just simply state that I strongly oppose the amendment.
Okay. Any discussion on the Winkler amendment, or the Mahoney amendment? Sorry.
Don't blame him.
I will be very clear. It is the Mahoney amendment. Representative Loffler.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, I know this is a difficult issue that divides us somewhat geographically, but I really do think they do intertwine. And for those of us who represent the metropolitan area, whenever there's an article about per diem, they think we're eaten downtown at the St. Paul Grill or someplace. I can't imagine how we could have those kind of expenses. And I know it's a different situation for people who are living away from home. And so I think they really do go together. And to me, I'd quite honestly be open to even a higher salary for people who have to have a second household rather than going through the per diem kind of game. It just makes it a very awkward system to explain to those of us from the Metro.
Mr. Chair and members, I think the more confusion we add to this and the more problematic it becomes, the harder this bill is to pass. The harder it becomes to address what this constitutional amendment is attempting to address. We are all adults here. We can set per diems as we need to. If this thing goes through and the Citizens Council comes up with a reasonable salary, I trust the chair of the Rules Committee to bring forth a more reasonable per diem package, whether we split it rural and urban, I don't really care. But don't get this too complicated, otherwise it'll die of its own weight.
And I agree. I think it needs to be consistent. That was the argument put forth prior down the other end of the table, and I think they would agree with that consistency. And Representative Loeffler, I agree with you, and that's why we should take per diem out of here. We shouldn't talk about it. Per diem means per day. In Latin, per daily expenses is what it means. We probably should never mention per diem, and then we'd all be better off. If rules would just say we're going to give you a daily expense check and quit calling it per diem, it would never get printed again in the paper per diem. So I think there are other ways to handle it, and it's per daily expense. That's what per diem is.
Representative.
Well, again, I'm going to repeat that this is already handled with a cap that's established by the federal government, of which we live under. And if we get over that amount, we have to pay income tax on that amount. And we aren't near that amount. It's up in the $180 range, and we're down around the $117 or $18 or $20 range. Senate's a little more. But I want to take a different tact on per diem. Everybody thinks that the per diem is bad in the eyes of the voter. Actually, per diem is good in the eyes of the voter. Because all of us make the same salary, except Tony, I think, and Margaret. And they
and,
deserve...
I'm sorry, Representative Joe, and Representative Seifert as well.
And they make a slightly more amount for their incredible amount of responsibility they have. But it's very common back in my legislative district to somebody say, my God, Bill, you're the highest in per diem over all those other legislators. And I say, I think Junkie actually is this year. But I say, that's right, because I'm working a lot more than those other people. And then they go, well, what are you talking about? I said, well, every day that I'm on the job, I get paid per diem. And I said, I'm the highest, so I'm the one that's busting out there to get things done. And so I just reverse it on them, and I don't think it's an issue. I think people just keep talking about it and talking about it and talking about it. I'm frankly, on the record, you can print it in the paper, I'd love to have the highest per diem, because I'm the one that then is representing my citizens, and at meetings, and attending meetings where there's a record of attendance, and I'm making decisions that are hopefully benefiting my citizens. And we have, this is something that should not be in this because it just complicates it, people don't understand it. It's not the way it should be done.
Representative Carlson.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, as one that tried to give Representative not to get run for his money, but ended up slightly behind the Metro. So that's what I wanted to comment on.
Metro, wanted to point out, and this I think is following up on what Representative Dill is pointing out, and per diem or the per day payment does reflect workload in the legislature. I'm now retired, but there was a time when I was still teaching, and the policy of the school district, and rightly so, is that if I wasn't on the clock teaching, if there was a legislative meeting, I had to take time off from work without pay. In addition to that, if you wanted to maintain your pension benefits, you had to pay into the pension plan for any time that you were not there if you wanted to get your credit. So there are some rather unique things that are difficult to account for. So I guess what I'm speaking for is maintaining that flexibility, because it does adjust for workload. And when I've pointed that out, when I've been asked through the years, and you know, about per diem levels or the amount of per diem that a given member, or sometimes even myself, when I'm asked, you know, about what per diem level I may have drawn, when you explain to the people that that reflects workload, they accept that, they understand that.
Mr. Mosman.
Hey, Mr. Chair, I would encourage us to support the amendment, because the per diem is something that we really do have control over. Even as an individual, I can refuse it. I don't have to take it. And so I'm held accountable for that. It is one of the only areas that the legislature has fairly kept up with regard to expenses. And given those individuals that need compensation an opportunity to get that compensation. But salary is very different, and that's the thing that has, we've not been able to get past, and I think that's the focus that we need to have with regard to this constitutional amendment.
Any further discussion on the Mahoney amendment? The Mahoney amendment. Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
The motion does prevail. Further discussion to the Eakin bill as amended. All right. Hearing no discussion, I will renew my motion that House File 3796 be recommended to pass as amended and be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
Motion prevails. Members will be having a Rules Committee meeting 5 minutes before session tomorrow. You can check your emails on that for members that aren't here, but if you see anybody, 5 minutes before session, Rules Committee, do a calendar for the day. We're adjourned.